That's the sound you make in the ball pit?
I do make that sound in the ball pit.
Is it because you're making like an alligator and you got like just your eyes poking up from the bows and you're like climbing along underneath them all? Or is it because you're actually doing the do in the ball pit?
Crocodile. But also, I make that noise in the cockpit too.
Mm-hmm.
Not just the ball pit.
Mm-hmm. Welcome back to Dime Gaming Bros. It bugs me that we say bros. I know that's how it's like typed out, but it should be the Dime Comic or Dime Gaming Brothers.
I think you're just an old man and you don't like abbreviations. It's like the Super Mario Brothers, you know?
Right. That's what I'm saying. You say the brothers, but it's typed out B-R-O-S.
Super Mario Bros.
No.
Mario and Luigi Mario.
It's the brothers.
I don't know, man. I think you are a wee bit silly.
I'm Jacob. He is Spencer. We are here today to talk about several things. Starting off with the 2008, the OG, Dead Space.
Dem Spoos. Best horror game.
Oh, calm down.
One of.
Yeah, it starts out with a spaceship going to find another spaceship because there was a distress beacon. And shit's fucked.
Shit is indubitably fucked. Then you fix things.
And there's spoopy monsters chasing you.
You go on many, many, many fetch quests.
Here is a $1 million meme idea. Or million updoot meme idea. Free for you. You find a funny face, right? And you have that as the base image. And this is the monster around the corner waiting for me. No. The monster around the corner waiting for Isaac to come over here, but he's too busy curb stomping my friends.
Yeah.
This game gave me trust issues in many different ways. The corpses just laying there, but actually they're a monster waiting for Isaac to walk up.
A boogie woogie woo.
Yeah, exactly.
Yes.
They have ragdoll physics, so even after you've shot them and curb stomped them, they still latch onto you accidentally because of
sticky
ragdoll sticky physics, which gives me trust issues. And also, there are many, many, many save points through the game. So it's like, oh no, there's a boss through this door, I better save. And it's not, it's just more of the level. Or it's like, you backtrack enough that you're back at like the main hub of this level, so you save every time you walk through there.
Best horror game. I think this is one of the first serious-ish like a horror survival games I ended up playing, and it still tops the list. It holds up incredibly well for being released like 15 years ago.
Yeah.
It looks really good. The graphics look good. There's very few technical issues. The physics all still work really well. There's very minimal moments where it's like, that was a hardware limitation.
Right.
Like, it still it feels a little simple, but not because it's dumb, but just because I'm special and have dumb, bad expectations. Where I'm like, it's infinite levels of infinite special infiniteness. And it's like, that we can't do that yet.
It's impressive how even you take a break for the day, you close it down, you come back the next day, and it pulls up the main menu, and you hit continue, and it jumps you right into it. There's no loading in between the main menu and the level.
Yeah. Since I was playing on the Series X, there isn't even loading. It quick resumes. Unless I've played another game since then.
Right.
So if I turn my console off. Not on sleep mode, off.
Yep.
And then I just load the game back up, it is immediately right back in. Like, right. No, 2 seconds tops.
And
there's very few like actual waiting periods between sections of the Ishimura.
Well, if you look at
outside
the speed running techniques, like legit half the game is waiting. It's such a terrible game to speedrun because there are unskippable cutscenes, and they're really long cutscenes, so I'm sure there's some loading in there. But also, the elevators take up a lot of time, and
that's
it's
true.
Not like, you know, modern games where your character is, like, scaling through the crack in the wall,
yeah.
And it's just legit loading. It's just an elevator. It's a set time every time, no matter your specs.
Yeah. It's more impressive, I think, that it loads it so consistently between doing that. Like, you can hop in the same elevator and go up and down and up and down and up and down and up and down. And, like, there's no problems.
Right.
It doesn't fuck up. It doesn't crash. There's no delays. It just runs. Like, there was no... I had no tech issues with this that I thought were the game bugging out, other than the ragdoll physics.
Right.
Like, there was no... This thing won't load, or I can't go through this hallway or whatever. Like, there was not a thing. There was sometimes my console was being dumb. One time it overheated, but that was, I think, just because it was really hot out that day.
Too many
and
candles underneath it.
Yeah, I was roasting my Xbox on a spit, right. You know? So there was one time that happened.
You had that sacrifice to Todd Howard?
Yes, because I make sacrifices to Todd Howard. But, like, there's no part where the game breaks at all.
Right.
That's, I think, the most impressive part is it's, you know, sometimes the character models are a little simple, sometimes the animations are a little rough, but it always flows smoothly.
Talk to me about HUD.
So this is the game where they were like, haha, Lamau HUD, what's that? So I don't know if this is the first, but it's certainly the most prolific example of not having a HUD in your game. It's an immersive element, which is one of the things that this game strives for, is constant immersion. So your health bar goes up your spine. You have your stasis, which is like your force powers, basically, has like a little wheel circle thing, and your gun has an ammo counter on top of it. There's no... there is no HUD, effectively. Like, they're all things that could conceivably be on those suits. Like, if you were a miner on the Ishimura, it would make sense to have an oxygen meter on the backside of your buddy's back, so you can see what's going on without having to talk to them. Like, it's all diegetic, like music. It's just all there. So there isn't, like, a HUD cluttering up your screen. There isn't artificial light, like, blinding your eyeballs while you're trying to go through dark passageways. It's just Isaac glows. He has little glowy bits. And, like, the gun has an ammo counter on it. And
even
that's it.
If you get lost, it's built into his suit that he can just, like, hit the magic button and there's a line on the floor.
I do not like that, though. That is my one thing. I didn't know it was there until most of the way through my playthrough, and then I accidentally bumped the wrong button. And I don't think it should be there, because I think the map does a good enough job of doing that. The map is a little clunky, but it does have a nice hollow projector map, and I think if you can't manage to use the map, you shouldn't just have the magic trail to go somewhere. It does take immersion away from the horror survival aspect of it. I don't like that.
I think the map would, too.
Why wouldn't you have a map? You work in the place a size of a mountain.
It didn't work there, though.
But you can download the map. You don't just have the map. You have to download the map when you get onto the ship. If you were working on the Ishimura, why would you not have a massive map system? They're all workers. There's nobody on...
Why would you not have a tracker for the thing on the map? So, yeah, maybe if you put an objective on your map, and then the little line worked for that, that'd be cool. Not just have it automatic.
I think it takes away from enjoying the atmosphere, for the most part, is the more pressing element of the magic trail I don't like.
There's
I never used it after
so
I found it.
So much backtracking that I can understand why it gets confusing of, like, why am I going back through this hallway a third time? It's not... It's linear, but it's not. It's not like you just go forward. It's a lot of back and forth and get the battery, get the wheel, get the tool, get the thing, kill the guy. So it's like you can get turned around pretty easily.
But I think you can also unturn yourself around pretty easily.
With the map.
No, not even with the map. You go to the nearest, like, hallway, and there are arrows on the wall telling you where to go.
I get that, but you have to go back and forth a bunch of times. Every level has the green exit sign everywhere, But that's for when you're done with the level.
Yeah. The fact that we're arguing about one of, like, eight parts that make up the hypothetical HUD is kind of the point, to be fair. The rest of it functions so smoothly during gameplay and even during cutscenes where, like, it adds on to the fact that the in-game cutscenes are rendered using the in-game engine. There isn't a... And now we cut to black and then we load up a big video file. They're just rendered in real time and using the same assets. And that's why they flow in and out so quickly. It never takes power away from the what little power you have. It doesn't take away from you to make an explosion go off. It'll, I think it's the end of chapter 2 or 3 where you leave the tram system and then shit gets fucked and it blows up. And it'll make you spin around and get all topsy-turvy for like 4 seconds, and then you're back in control. There isn't a prolonged hand-holding. It immediately throws you back into shooting things.
Let's talk about sound design, because...
The best. Never been done better. I would know. Sound design's fucking impeccable.
From the weight of Isaac's footsteps, it's like... It's like, what's his name? Mr. X from Resident Evil 2. Like, those footfalls. But it's you as the main character. And...
He wears big, clumpy snow boots.
You have... You have zero G, or... Like, you have sections in space where you're floating around and just, like, breathing from your oxygen tank. And the sound outside of your character is so muffled, and everything that Isaac is doing is very loud in your ears.
I really like in the zero-G or the zero-G and zero-oxygen sections when they combine.
Yes.
Whereas his breathing freaks you out more than the actual timer does.
Mm-hmm.
You'll have 30 seconds of air left, and he's like... And it's like it really gets you going, and because you're trained to rely on the audio cues through the whole game,
right?
You won't look at the HUD and realize how much time you have left.
Right.
It's very... It's
like, am I almost dead? I have 25 seconds left.
I'll be fine. I have an oxygen tank. It's cool. Yeah, it's really nice. And especially in the zero oxygen areas where enemies just completely sneak up on you with no sound.
Uh-huh.
It's on the one hand more frightening, but it's also funnier because it's like the big wiggity woo is like floating through the air at you, but it's making no sound. It sounds broken. It's really funny for me. But it's really good at sneaking up on you when you're outside the ship.
It's kind of annoying near the end of the game when my weapons are all leveled up and I'm just wrecking dudes. And I'm trying to solve the puzzle, and all of a sudden I hit the switch to spawn a couple of bad guys. And the music is blaring, they're spoopy, the monster is chasing you music, and I kill 2 of them and the music's still going. And it's like, alright, where's the 3rd one? I just want to finish the stupid puzzle.
I guess. You're silly.
There are some big rooms where the enemies got hung up on corners or whatever.
Yeah, it definitely happens.
And it's like, I just want to kill the guy. Oh, it's one of the demon babies. F you.
I do not like the demon babies.
Screw you in the butthole.
I think it's that I more commonly found in the section in the oxygen supply area where there's like an actual infinite supply of enemies. If you stay on the quote-unquote ground level floor, they'll continuously spawn. Like... Unless you progress through, you know, they pop out of the vents, you beat 2 guys, you wait 2 minutes, more come. And it just keeps repeating. So if you're exploring the base floor and you're milking it, it just fuck off, like go upstairs.
Uh-huh.
And that was a bit annoying because then the music is constantly running at a high level. But the sound level mixes with the very minimal score extremely well. There are different stings for each of the enemy types. And the enemy types are almost always in pairs of the same type, so you know what you're actually dealing with. You can it gives you a 4-second head start most of the time to switch to the right weapon. Like, even if a slasher is running at you, they are a lot slower than you think they are. Like, they look like they're fucking yeeting at you. And it's like, I have time to switch between all my weapons and then aim well before it gets to me, most of the time. And I think that's what gets most of the scares through is the music and the sound design over the actual thing on screen jumped at you. Like, that's more what gets Like, the music freaks me out, and then the jump scare is what makes me, like, start fumbling.
Yeah.
You know, they work well in tandem.
The sound is what builds the tension.
Yeah. Especially when there's entire areas where it tricks you into thinking there's shit in the room and there isn't.
Right.
Where it's like, oh, the lights are off, and then there's shit in the walls. And then you're like, you're aiming down sights with your flashlight, looking everywhere, and there's nothing there.
Yep.
Like, I think it does a really good, for immersion, I think it does a really good job of establishing that, like, the Leviathan and the bigger stuff is everywhere. It's not just that there are slashers and demon babies in all the walls. It's like the whole ship has been taken over and it's constantly like farting and wheezing all over you.
I don't even know the technical names of the monsters. I just have like my little pet names, like the demon babies, or you have the impregnators.
Which
and is then you the have little pterodactyl thing that brings enemies back to life if you didn't curb stomp.
And then you have the impregnated.
You have the mothers.
The big mummies.
Yep.
And then you have the scorpions.
Yep, exactly.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I know the slasher, the basic type is a slasher, but I don't even remember because I don't care. Like, they have cool names, but, like, the Necromorphs is a cool species name. I don't need more than that.
Right.
Like, it's like playing Halo in a way. I know. I have to bring it back. I like the pet names that the characters give them more than I like the, you know, this is what this species name is. Like, yes, I love the Ungoy. They're grunts, though. You know, like, it just, the pet names are cooler.
Yes.
They're dorky, but they're fun. And it makes fighting them a lot less dramatic in my own head, where I'm like, oh, look, it's two impregnators.
You have the freaking Crab Rangoon things that are walking around.
I'd say they're hands, but that works too.
Yeah, whatever. The Crab They're little triangular shaped. They got pointers on them.
You mean the things that drop out of the mummies?
If Crab Rangoons had, like, a pinky and a thumb attached to them and just flapped around, that's what that would look like.
Kind of. The things that pop out of the mummies if you shoot the mummies in the wrong way. Yes. Those fuckers are annoying.
Mm-hmm.
Just
that's what annoying. The flamethrower is good for.
They're very annoying. When I think of enemy design and, like, how the sandbox works, I do genuinely put this pretty damn close to, like, a Doom Halo area of, like, chess pieces. It's not quite there because on different difficulties, there will be very different enemy sets in each area, and it's a little, like, auto-generated. A little.
Finish your point.
But I feel comfortable, like, in this game, not in the sequels, but in this game, I feel like I know how every single enemy type functions very well by the time the game is over, and they don't act outside of their parameters, but they have a good range of things. Like, at most, slashers will just run at you apeshit and try to cut you, but, like, not all of them do. Sometimes they'll leave the room to just be weird.
Mm-hmm.
And then when you take out their legs and they lay on the ground, they'll act dead for a couple of seconds before they start crawling at you with their arms. Yeah. And, like, even, like, little things like that make it feel more their pieces on a board rather than just slop for the slaughter.
Right. You know?
And I think that's a nice spot in my brain.
What do you think about the upgrade trees at the bench? Do you like the, dare I say, dead space nodes that don't do anything that lead to actual upgrades?
They're fine. They're kind of mid. So I prefer, most of what I end up doing is upgrading. I buy the suits in the store.
Yep.
Where you just get the new suit that has some stuff. I bought
that thing as soon as possible.
Every single one. There's five. And I prefer those. I tried to keep a node on me all the time because I like using them to open doors for like storage rooms. But I think it's a solid like tree when you use the bench to upgrade either your weapons or your armor or your stasis or whatever. I never upgraded my kinetics or my stasis at all. There's no fucking point. They work fine enough. Like, there's enough juice in the circle to spend during a fight or a platforming in quotations like section. I never really had a problem with it.
Interesting.
I constantly leveled up my plasma cutter. I had my plasma cutter max level by like halfway through the game. Mm-hmm. I didn't even buy another weapon until I had maxed out my plasma cutter because it's a great weapon. And I was only playing on medium. Mm-hmm. It's fine. It works. It's just a little... I don't know. It's a little unsatisfying, I think, is my bigger issue. Is because each upgrade tree has a different pattern to it, and they all have different, like, empty space, effectively. Mm-hmm. They just don't feel really satisfying to upgrade. Maybe a bigger visual change would have been cool, whereas, like, when you get a new suit, Isaac goes into the Bible Man chamber. but when you upgrade stuff on your bench, you don't even do anything. Even in... the ripoff to this game, Callisto Protocol, you upgrade any weapon, you have to put it into the 3D bench machine to get upgrades. Like, that, it's boring after a while, but it still adds a little bit of an oomph. Whereas this, you navigate through a menu, you upgrade yourself, and then you're like, I have to go test this to see what's different.
One thing I really like, and it's like, it's gonna sound really dumb when I say it, but when you increase the capacity to the magazines of your weapons, it helps your inventory space. Like,
yes,
it makes so much sense, and it's so satisfying. It's like, I've been picking up a crap ton of this gun's ammo. I'm gonna increase its capacity so that my inventory is less cluttered.
Yeah, it expands the magazines, and then that, yeah. Because it each inventory slot is one magazine at the level you're at, which is nice. It also starts you out fresh. So if you upgrade the Buzzsaw Louie arm to get your upgraded Saw magazine, and you were on empty when you started, like the magazine is empty and you have 5 in your inventory or whatever, if you upgrade the capacity, it immediately reloads the thing and you have like a full mag to start. So it's like that on higher difficulties, that is definitely on New Game Plus, that is a really necessary mechanic.
Right, and it's the same thing with your stasis and whatever. It reloads your stasis when you upgrade it.
I just really didn't need it on this playthrough because I was only on medium. I probably should have done hard because I didn't have a lot of difficulty on this time around.
I was nervous when I started with the upgrades because it felt like upgrade notes were super rare.
They get a lot more common, right, really rapidly.
Right, I saw the trees. I was like, holy crap. Like, I must have to buy a crap ton of nodes from the store, which I did because I had money coming out my ears.
Yeah.
But... yeah, you can pretty much find nodes all over the levels near the end of the game, too.
So I think it's after chapter 4, probably, there's at least 3 or 4 per section.
I maxed out almost everything. Like, my plasma cutter, my suit, my stasis or kinesis or whatever. Because it was just 3 dots on whatever that one was. And then, like, I was kind of picking at my other weapons, but... I still wasn't sure if I wanted to keep those or get a different one, so I just kind of waffled around.
Yeah. I do think it does have less of an inventory management, I wouldn't say issue, but challenge than its predecessor, Resident Evil 4, does. Because this is Resident Evil 4 in space, basically. Like, that had a much tighter inventory management system.
I still had a little bit, but
no, I definitely had to pick and choose sometimes, but it wasn't like a constant,
right,
the whole game I'm bickering between health packs and ammo. Like,
right.
This was more like, oh no, I have 8 stacks of blades. I guess I should dump those and get a health pack.
Sell 2 of them. Yeah.
Right. You know, I just feel like that was more common. I really should play through on the next difficulty and do New Game Plus because I feel like it'll be a differing experience. I've never played this on New Game Plus. So, or Impossible difficulty, I think, is the top one. Haven't done it. So, I should probably do that.
Or alternatively, play New Game Plus on medium and play the whole game with just your
plasma cutter. I was really close to doing that too. I made it to, I think, chapter 8 before I even bought a second weapon. Like, I was really trying to go for it. Oh, that's such a good achievement to get. Like, that's such a nice, like, you did the game with a handgun. Mm-hmm. I'm proud of you. You know, I think that's nice.
And I think it's a silver or whatever. It's
their point value.
It's higher up.
Yes, it's a neat one. Yeah, I like it. Story. Do you have thoughts on the story?
I was not expecting where it went. I was here for, like, car crash corpses trying to kill me, and it turned into, spoilers, big cult beans and shit. It was like, whoa, I did not expect a cult in space. Like,
yeah. I really like the story. It's a little now definitely played out of like, wow, the alien technology has like a, like the, Doom 2016 is aping so much of this.
I didn't grasp all of it. I'm looking forward to trying to catch more of it when we play the remake next month and see like how all the things come together. And now I'm more aware of what's happening, so right. I'll catch more as I play. But
yeah, I really like. The setting is cool with that, but I like the thing that I think it doesn't make really apparent until later in the game when you start getting like visual playback on like the not data logs but like the collectibles basically yep. where it's like it'll show you the video footage of what happened. Almost every person on the Ishimura was part of the Unitarian Church.
Yep.
Like, and that's not something you know at all going into it. Right. Like, and especially when it pairs with the other spoiler twist that your girlfriend is dead, which is related, like the way that it integrates those two plots I thought was really, really cool, especially the first time around. Like, at first you're like, wow, this is kind of kooky. Like, even Prey, the game that I talked about last year, almost a year ago now, actually, holy cow, it has a similar, like, maybe these alien life forms are like the next level of human evolution and we should worship them as gods. And it's like, whoa, buddy, are you okay? Like, there's a bit of that stuck in there, too. And I don't know if this is the first instance of it in a game, but it's definitely what made it popular. And I think it's a cool subgenre of stories or whatever. It hits on very existential things. And that's the thing with the horror, for me, to kind of wrap the thing up in a bow. It hits the horror on multiple different levels, and that's why it's scary. It's not because the jump scares are scary. It's not because the sound design is scary. It's not because, like, it's gross and there's body parts everywhere and the creatures are fucking revolting. Or because, like, wow, people are bad. It's because there's so many types of horror, like, layered on top of each other. Like, I wouldn't feel comfortable saying this is, like, a jump scare game, because it's not. There's plenty of them in there. Mm-hmm. It's not a body horror game, because that's not the focus. And it's not, like, all existential either. But by the time it's over, you have multiple types of horror and filth to sort through. And I think that that's what really sells it, is people are fucked. Aliens are weird. The government's fucked. Space is fucked. You're depressed. Bodies are gross. Like, there's a bajillion things that just kind of stack into a nice sandwich instead of relying on, like, there's intestines on the wall. Does that make sense?
Yes.
Yes. It just, it ties it up in a tight little bow and then chokes it out and beats it to death.
Speaking of ultraviolence and gore,
I was about to say this is probably in my top 10 games of all time.
Wow.
Top 15, maybe.
It is very, very good.
It's so fucking good. I really hope that the remake works out well.
Somebody at work told me that I should play Dead Space 2 before playing the remake so that the visuals won't make it harder to appreciate Dead Space 2, but I really, really appreciated Dead Space 1 this month. Like, yeah. It looked great. I didn't have any problems with it. It looked awesome. So
the faces are a bit wonky, but also there's only, like, 4 human faces in the whole game.
Right.
So, yeah. Gotta shoot the little spermy tentacles before they shoot you.
The lock-on tentacle grab that comes out of the wall a couple of times is bullshit. It's like, ugh, this thing again? Yeah. All right, I'll shoot the postule.
Yeah.
Meh.
Yeah. The guy's just like, ah! I scream, your head's gone. That one does get fucking annoying. Speaking of ultraviolence.
Yes.
Twisted Metal was a show that happened, and I watched it with my eyeballs. I'm gonna forget this, like, next week.
I mean, it wasn't the worst thing we've watched.
No, it's definitely not, but it is the most thing that I've ever watched.
There were enjoyable bits.
Yes. But nothing was, like,
this is cinema.
Wow. Yeah, no.
Yeah, no.
There was no cinema moments. But there also wasn't, like, this was a cash cow moment either. It was just like, this
is... It wasn't cringe either.
Mostly. It was pretty dated. I don't think intentionally. I think it just was... They wrote the script 15 years ago. Like, this felt dated in the bad way.
Hmm.
Yeah. It's written by a couple of the guys who wrote the Deadpool movies. So, weird connection there. I feel like it makes sense, though. On that, I don't know.
Anthony Mackie is a milkman. He runs jobs and is kind of like a backwards bounty hunter. And he gets hired to do a job. He has to go to the worst part of the country because this is a post-apocalyptic America and get the thing, and then he can be welcomed into civilization.
Where they have corn dogs and women.
Yes.
And steak.
So he goes on an adventure over 10 episodes to do the job.
And the job happens, and then he gets in, and then he says, I don't like it here. And then we get sequel bait.
Yep.
I don't think this is getting a second season. It's been really popular, but I don't think it's going to get the best. I don't think it's getting the warmest reception they wanted.
Yeah, I don't think it's going to get funded.
No, it was, I think, a total of like 40 to 50 million for the whole show. And with that in mind, it definitely seems a bit rough. They were, the pre-production was pre-COVID, and then all of production was post-COVID.
Weird.
So I was having difficulty kind of tracking why the visuals were so inconsistent, and we're like, wow, that was, okay. And then, like, holy shit, is this 2002?
Right.
Like, I just don't know why that would have happened. Like, I don't know if it's because Peacock outsourced it to a weird company without a lot of experience, or if their own studio is bad. I have no idea. It just... It was weird. For, like, a $5 million budget an episode, that's pretty rough. I mean, I don't know, man. I've seen, like, cop shows that look better.
Good performances?
Mostly, yeah.
Mostly. Anthony Mackie, of course. Thomas Hayden Church.
He was very good for being a very nothing character.
Sweet Tooth is... is performed by that guy.
He's acted. The performance is by Samo Joe.
Yeah, that
he's
guy.
A wrestler. He's really cool.
And then is voiced by Will Arnett.
I thought, despite the fact that I think the voice wasn't taken care of very well in post, it definitely sounded like it was coming out of a microphone. I think the two paired pretty well.
Yes.
It just really felt like they didn't do much with the voice, like on top of the recording.
It was just his Batman voice.
That is kind of true. But his Batman voice is so good.
Yeah.
That's like the best Batman movie to ever exist.
But the voice matched with the little body motions very, very well.
I think that I think I was way more impressed with how well the performance was than the vocal performance. Because wrestlers are kind of underestimated on how well they can act because they have to do so much of their stupid, gaudy, crappy performances through a mask and a big bunch of props and all the junk.
Right.
So, like, they're actually kind of... They're just acting. Just in a weird setting. And I thought that was pretty solid. Will Arnett definitely just got paid, like, $10 bajillion to sit at home and, like, throw some funny memes into his phone. But it was somewhat funny. The jokes were kind of hit or miss. Some were pretty funny. I think most of it was intentionally funny, but not because the jokes were funny. I think it was like, wow, they just... Right after people start having sex, they put a gas can nozzle into a car tank. And it's like, that was funny. The jokes are not that funny. But I feel like the things that happen are much funnier to watch. If that makes any semblance of sense.
Kinda.
The constructed jokes aren't that funny.
But beans.
There are some beans in this. Not a lot, but like they're there. They're super not subtle at all, but also it's not the show's main focus at all. It's like also mall cops suck, fuck you. And then like also goes back to hippie lesbians making out in a race car. They definitely had sex on that car.
Beans.
Beans. I had no familiarity with this property whatsoever before.
Me either.
Even when this was announced, I don't think we talked about it. I was like, that's a thing? I don't know what that means.
I kind of knew of it, but I wasn't old enough to play Twisted Metal when it came out, and I lost track of it since.
And it just looks like, especially because it's a series that's, I wouldn't say dead, but like kind of dead. Kind of dead. Like, it looks like GTA mods on top of Mario Kart.
Yeah, kind of.
Like, this is the incoherent gibberish, but it's funny because there's rockets. And that's kind of what the show was. Yeah. It was like, this is retarded.
There was
But there's big guns.
There was a game that released recently, and it was kind of like a little bit cartoony Twisted Metal, and it completely flopped.
Weird.
So I think someone was testing the waters, and it didn't go anywhere.
No clue.
So,
the clown, Sweet Tooth, is literally the Joker, baby, but big
and funny.
He is actually kind of funny. That was more entertaining than I was expecting. I don't like the chemistry between the two leads. I'm sorry. I was just being horny the whole time because I'm a horny person. I don't like their chemistry. I don't think there's much there, and I don't find her very attractive. I really don't.
So you're saying you're being horny for Anthony Mackie?
I was just being horny in the abstract. I'm like, ooh, sex. Not like, I am jealous. You know? Just more like,
I don't know.
That's a thing.
I mostly liked it.
Yeah.
It kinda
I've seen worse.
It got annoying when they did the TV trope of, like, we like each other this episode, and now we hate each other this episode, and now we like each other again.
But we're fighting.
And now we hate each other again.
Yeah, that was a bit obnoxious. A lot of the car stunts were pretty solid.
Yeah.
They were surrounded by really bad CG backgrounds, but, like, the actual, we flipped a car and made it go boom, looked really good. Yeah, so that was cool. The gunplay was pretty shit, to be honest.
Mm-hmm.
That was, I think my standard on that is just really high, but that was not impressive. There's a lot of piss jokes. There's a lot of shit jokes, too. He has such a potty mouth. They're just so edgy.
I think that's pretty much it.
I feel like it was trying to bet on being edgier than it was. I've seen many, 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 many shows far grosser than that.
Edgier than the edgy show.
No, I just didn't think it was impressive. It didn't get a wow, they did that out of me. It was like, the first episode of The Walking Dead is grosser than this.
Yeah.
You know, I feel like they could have.
They said the fuck word.
A lot. Like, whoa, you said fuck. I say fuck.
What?
He's literally me. It's okay. On the TV show rating scale, it's above Resident Evil and on par with Halo.
No.
It's not as disappointing. I'm attached to Halo, so it's more disappointing that show kind of sucked. But
that show really sucked.
But I had more fun watching that show than I did this. I had fun watching the show because we were dunking on it the whole time. Where if I was watching this in a vacuum in my room, sitting on my couch doing nothing, this is 8 hours of, like, fine.
Yeah.
Halo is about the same. It's like, this is tolerable television, but there isn't much special here.
Halo is way more painful for me.
Mer.
This show got actual laughs out of me at some points.
I guess.
Whether they were trying to or not, like, I physically laughed. Halo was like, why are they doing this? Ugh, I want to commit a hate crime.
I think it's below all of the animated TV series, though. Because I really think we just need to stop trying to make live-action video game things. Just turn everything into an animated property, and it's always better.
Yes.
Like, every single one.
And cheaper.
That's it. Like, this is maybe the top of the live-action TV show list, but, like, this is below every animated thing we've looked at.
What else we got?
News!
It's the news, baby.
I sent it to you. The Duo Discourse dudes strike again.
From NintendoLife.com. Uncover treasures and mysteries of the ancient world alongside Lara Croft in three classic Tomb Raider adventures, now remastered and featuring each game's expansion content. Face off against deadly foes, reveal dangerous myths and solve puzzles with upgraded graphics and the option to switch to the original polygonal look at any time. Tomb Raider 1 through 3 Remastered starring Lara Croft is available for pre-order later today and launches digitally in Nintendo's eShop and in the My Nintendo Store on Nintendo.com on February 14th of 2024, just in time to celebrate Lara Croft's birthday.
It's cool because launching on new consoles is always good. The thing for me that really stood out is that they're layering both versions on top of each other.
Yeah, they clearly didn't learn from the MCC.
Okay, well, I was saying that as a positive, actually. MCC was rough, and even Halo Anniversary was bad because they switched the art design so much. I think I really respect running two versions of the game at the same time. Even if there are problems with doing that, like not everything matches up exactly the same. Right. Like, just being willing to do that, I think, is really cool. I like smacking the select button a billion times and switching between stuff just for fun.
I find it interesting that it's only Nintendo.
There's probably a contract. And knowing Nintendo, it's almost certainly a contract thing. Speaking of Tomb Raider, from Gizmodo.com, during its Drop 01 livestream event, Netflix unveiled the first official look at its Tomb Raider anime, The Legend of Lara Croft. The show was originally announced back in 2021 and marks the first new piece of Tomb Raider media since the 2018 reboot movie starring Alicia Vikander, which we talked about last month on this podcast. You should go listen to that episode and that clip because we talked about it and I guess had insight. Set in the
Would you please hack it up already?
Yeah, I wish. Set in the same continuity as Crystal Dynamics' Survivor trilogy of games, which encompass the titular 2013 reboot, Rise of the Tomb Raider, and Shadow of the Tomb Raider, the series from Castlevania studio Powerhouse Animation stars Hayley Atwell, Mommy, as that continuity's version of Lara Croft. While plot details are currently under wraps, the big thing worth knowing is that Lara appears to be raiding tombs and ends up getting involved in something supernatural that'll require her to set things right before the world becomes endangered. Like her video game counterpart, this Lara has only... Like her video game counterpart, this Lara only has two friends she's ever truly needed. A pickaxe for climbing and a bow and arrow for silent kills. Actually, that's three things? This looks really good.
Yep.
I think the animation style fits. The teaser was really short, but it looked okay. And it's very odd that they're choosing to continue this because we talked about this a while back.
Yeah.
MGM and Amazon have the rights for a live action show and I think games?
The Crystal Dynamics trilogy is over.
It is. And I think they said that they wanted to do another game, but it's super far down the line. So, like, it's just an odd choice.
Yes.
But the Castlevania show is great. Powerhouse Animation has other really good stuff. Hayley Atwell is a good choice. I don't know. It looks good. It's cool. It's been a while.
You know who else is good? Night Dive Studios is very good. I like many of their things.
How would you fucking know?
I like many of their things.
Sussy.
IGN.com says Night Dive Studios, who recently remastered classic first-person games System Shock and Quake 2, is doing the same to another first-person legend, Star Wars Dark Forces.
I knew about this.
I might have even sent this to you.
I think you did.
It is in development for all major platforms, PC, PlayStation, Xbox, and the Switch. Watch the trailer. The single-player only Star Wars first-person shooter first released in 1995 for PC and was the first adventure for players as Kyle Katarn, who would go on to become a Jedi in Jedi Knight and its sequels. You don't ever get your hands on a lightsaber in Dark Forces, but it's remembered fondly for its memorable missions and difficult boss fights. I think the audience will appreciate the degree of challenge, Night Dive's Larry Kupperman told IGN. The remaster cleans up the 28-year-old Dark Forces gameplay and cutscenes similarly to how Night Dive approached the recent Quake 2 remaster with its in-house KEX engine, thus allowing modern controls and features like 4K resolution, widescreen support. The original was in old 4:3 aspect ratio days. Go ahead.
Did Zack Snyder make this video game?
With 1024 by 768 resolution. And 60 FPS. What we really try to do is bring back the way you felt when you played the original, Kupperman said. That's our mission, he added. Our mantra is always about preservation, and you don't preserve things by changing them. Well.
Well.
I'm excited.
This looks really cool.
Yes.
I haven't played this game, actually.
You what?
I know.
Wow.
And I don't like Kyle Katarn and anything else he's in either. I have hot takes. But I am looking forward to it because I've been wanting a good Star Wars first-person shooter. And
Dark Forces is good.
Republic Commando is great, but it's also a little puzzly. It's kind of more like Metroid. And I'm getting bored of Battlefront 2. So I need something different. And this is cool because the original graphics look like shit.
And Night Dive is good.
And apparently the last two remakes that they've done are really good. I bought the first Quake remake, which wasn't by Night Dive, but I was thinking about picking up the second one too, because it's like $5 on Xbox. Worth it, I think. From Kotaku.com, a teaser for Star Wars Knights of the Old Republic remake coming to PlayStation 5 nearly stole the show at Sony's September 2021 showcase. But reports surfaced last year that the project was already in trouble. Now Star Wars fans have noticed that Sony recently deleted tweets about the game and has hidden the trailer from its official YouTube channel. Word that the teaser trailer had been removed from PlayStation's channel first began to spread on September 28th on the Gaming Leaks and Rumors subreddit. Hey, I go there. Twitter user Crusader3456 later shared a thread showing that Sony's tweets about the teaser from the original 2021 PlayStation Showcase had also been deleted. The only official mention left appears to be a single tweet promoting multiple games from the livestream. It's possible that the highly anticipated KOTOR remake is still alive, and this is just some weirdness on the part of Sony's social media department. It might be the case that the project, which debuted as a PS5 exclusive, has all been but canceled amid ongoing developmental issues and massive budget cuts at parent publisher Embracer, which we've talked about a fair few times. Sony and Embracer did not immediately respond to a request for comment. So, in addition to that, they lost their first game director because he was outed as a shithead, and then they restarted everything over. So I think this thing might just be toast.
Yep.
This is why they need to stop announcing things 5 years before they come out, because everyone gets excited and then they don't get enough funding. Like, just don't do that. Very sussy.
An exclusive from entertainmentweekly.com. I have received your autism. Following the success of its debut feature, Nimona, Annapurna Animation is ready to launch its next phase of movies. Multiple projects are now in the works as key creative positions have been put in place, including a new project from Nimona co-director Nick Bruno and the next title from Ice Age director Chris Wedge, EW, can exclusively report. Among other intriguing items on the agenda for the division are plans to adapt video games from Annapurna Interactive, the gaming branch of the indie studio. First up is Stray, the award-winning adventure game from the developers at Blue 12 Studio. Released in 2022, Stray puts players in control of a stealthy cat who must traverse an underground city populated by robots and mutant bacteria with the help of a friendly drone, B-12. Not to be confused for the vitamin. Robert Baird, who leads Annapurna Animation, with Andrew Milstein, joined his fellow former Disney Animation executive for an interview with EW on a Monday afternoon in late August, having just come from a Stray brainstorming meeting. This is a game that's all about what makes us human, and there are no humans in it, he says. It's a buddy comedy about a cat and a robot, and there's such a hilarious dynamic. So, there's comedy inherent in this, but there's not one human being in this movie. I think it's one of the reasons why the game was incredibly popular, that you are seeing the world through the point of view of an adorable cat. How did they pull that off? And how are we going to pull that off in the movie? We will, even though sometimes it feels impossible, but we know that's the essence of the game and the key to telling the story. Baird went on to say that there's something so emotional that the creators are trying to capture when adapting the game to film. Blue 12, he explains, described the game as having a sort of hope punk vibe. a narrative concept that optimism is a form of resistance. I love that term, hope punk, he says. I think if we are going to do this adaptation justice, this is going to be the first and greatest hope punk movie that's ever been made.
Okay, so normally I say that I think making a movie about a video game thing right after it comes out is cringe. But also, having not played this, for context, it's coming to Xbox soon, so then I'll play it. I don't think that the gameplay is actually what makes the game good. So, I feel like the fact that it's the story, primarily from what every review I've seen has said, right, is fine.
And that's what these guys are talking about.
And also, Nimona was fucking fantastic. It's a really, really good animated movie, and it looks fantastic.
I have never heard of it.
It came out like 2 months ago. It's on Netflix.
Wow.
It's wicked good. So I think that that match works. And also, all the words he said sounded legit. Mm-hmm. They sounded like real words, not buzzwords. And, like, we wanted to make it accurate to the game and, like, dramatic. And, like, we wanted you to feel the feels. And it's like, I don't know. It's Goofy and Kitty. I feel like a very normal human response. From TheVerge.com. After Unity announced, then modified, then renounced its new runtime fee program, the video game development community wanted to know how and why this disastrous rollout happened. In addition to the letter, Unity Create President Mark Witten published on Friday, he also held a live fireside chat on YouTube in which he addressed some of the community's biggest questions and concerns. One of the first things Witten did, both in his letter and during the chat, was offer an apology. "I just want to say I'm sorry," Witten said in his Q&A with Jason Wyman, a YouTube creator known for his Unity tutorials. "It's very clear that we did not take enough feedback before we rolled out this program. One of the first and most important questions had also been circulating throughout social media since Unity's initial announcement. Why? Why add on to Unity's current pricing program, which is tiered, a subscription-based service, something that quickly became universally reviled and then quickly walk it back? The most fundamental thing that we're trying to do is build a sustainable business for Unity," Witten answered. He said the runtime fee was meant to be a balanced exchange between Unity and its users that would incorporate a kind of shared success. Additionally, the new plan now offers developers a choice. They can either pay fees based on a calculated amount based on the number of new people engaging with your game each month, or a flat 2.5% of all revenue, whichever is lower. Okay, so I watched the video and it was fine, and the quote-unquote solution they've come to is a lot better than what they announced with. But I did some digging on the behind the scenes of this, and the CEO of Unity and most of the committees dumped their stocks right before they did this announcement. They knew this wasn't going to be popular, and they're trying to tank the company 110%. There's no fucking shot. This is just insider trading. Like, Unity doesn't need the money. The company's doing fine. And then everybody who knew about this, conceivably before the announcement, dumped all their stocks and then tanked it. Like, this isn't conspiracy. This is just what they did. Like, I don't care why they say they need more money. They don't. It's very stupid. And every game that runs on Unity is dead now. Like, nobody who uses Unity to make their games can afford these fees. Like, none of them. So they're just gonna stop making these games.
Yep.
Very, very, very stupid. Very frustrating. And Unity's not even a good game engine either. It's just what you use at first because it's cheaper. Anger.
From Bloomberg.com, video game developer Striking Distance Studios, a subsidiary of Korean publisher Krafton Inc., is appointing new management several months after the commercial flop of its first game. Chief Executive Officer Glenn Schofield is leaving, a Krafton representative confirmed Wednesday, saying he has, quote, decided to pursue new opportunities, like jumping off a cliff. I don't know, it's just a new opportunity for him.
Yeah.
Striking Distance's Chief Operating Officer and Chief Financial Officer are also leaving, Krafton said all three departures were voluntary. Like jumping off a cliff.
I agree. I think he got pushed out because, so he was the guy who founded Krafton Inc. and he was the co-developer of Dead Space. And then he wanted to make more Dead Space by making Callisto Protocol flop. There's no shot that he didn't just get pushed out of the company. There's no way that he just was like...
No, they said that the departures were voluntary.
Okay, so you see, at my job, whenever some big bozo drops out high up, we say internally that they were resigned, and they were asked to give in their resignation by end of day to spend time with family and friends. You were fired. There's no shot. Which does suck, because he seems kind of cool, but like...
Honorable the game termination.
I guess. The game is rough, man. Like, and it's not doing well financially.
How many New Game Pluses have you done?
Since our last discussion, none.
No, total.
Total, I think 3.
That's it?
3 New Game Pluses on top of my first.
All right, so 4.
4, and it's all on... At first, I did hard, and then I dropped it down to easy because I'm just grinding until I get enough points because the game is busted and I have to do so many playthroughs to upgrade all my shit, and then I'm gonna have to do like the mega uber hard mode, and then I have to do New Game Plus on top of that, and then the DLC.
I was talking about it at work and I said that you were on your like 4th or 5th playthrough, and I got the cartoon eyes like popped out of heads,
and
like,
I still haven't upgraded half of my weapons. It's really rough.
People did not believe me, and then they automatically assumed it was Colin I was talking about.
Nope, it's me.
Yep.
Yeah. From PCGamer.com, the spirit of Tolkien's Shire has always lent itself to the cozy game aesthetic. It's been a dream of those with a love of all things that grow for some time, but finally someone has decided to turn their hand at a cozy Shire game. And it's not just any old game studio taking the lead here. Tales of the Shire will be coming straight from the hands of the official Lord of the Rings special effects studio, Weta Workshop, in New Zealand. As part of the celebrations for Hobbit Day, which was last week, Weta Workshop showed off a teaser trailer in its recent tweet, though it doesn't give much away. It's a short and intimate journaling session with a particularly artsy hobbit who is making the finishing touches to a watercolor of a monotone character in their notebook. Weta Workshop will be working with publisher Private Division to get the game to us on PC and console in 2024 so that we can finally live out our days in peace. And although Tales of the Shire hasn't shown up on Steam yet, you can check up on the progress through Private Division's official store page. We'll have to wait until next year for the game's features to be fully revealed, but at least we can say it's happening. No longer will we, as gentle halfling folk, be dragged off on wild adventures, bothersome things, only to find our home and all its contents being auctioned off to our greedy cousins. Not today. Good morning. Okay. I need it.
So many of these articles, you're like, okay.
I need it. I don't know what type of game it is, other than it's probably going to be Stardew Valley or Animal Crossing, but with Hobbit skins, and I don't...
Or...
What?
Telltale-ish.
No shot. I need cooking mechanics. I just want to make my fish...
Crispy bacon? And...
Tomatoes?
Yes.
I just need... I need this. You know, there's a different... Wants is a good new Batman game. Needs are good Lord of the Rings games, you know?
Yeah.
And the last one was a dud, so this is our only hope. It's a cute little hobbit simulator. Why not?
From Kotaku.com, Sega has canceled the yet-to-be-released Hyenas, an extraction shooter set in space that was in development at Total War and Alien Isolation Studio Creative Assembly.
Sega!
The publisher also canceled several other unannounced games as part of structural reforms across its European operations. Announced in June 2022, Hyenas was described as a sci-fi space piracy multiplayer FPS, pitting teams of players against each other and NPCs as they fought to steal valuable items and pieces of pop culture like Sonic statues and Rubik's cubes. On September 11th, the game wrapped up its most recent beta. 17 days later, Sega and the developers behind Hyenas confirmed it was canceled. Okay. That's good, I guess.
I think Sega's gonna go under again. They're just living off of Sonic, and I just don't think it's gonna last. Also, I think extraction shooters are kind of dead now.
Yeah.
So this didn't seem like a great idea.
Nope. And you're stealing Sonic statuettes. Really? Rubik's cubes? No.
From Kotaku.com, Netflix revealed a teaser trailer for its upcoming Devil May Cry anime during the Drop 01 Showcase, a live-streamed event where the streamer showcased new shows coming to its service in the near future. Devil May Cry, developed by Capcom back in 2001, was a highly influential character action game that followed Dante, a gun-slinging, pizza-eating devil hunter who protected the world from demons as at least so long as the money's good. As the son of a once powerful demon, Sparta, Dante used his demonic powers to defeat devils in style by juggling them in the air using an arsenal of weapons he'd made out of their fallen brethren. Later on in the series, Dante aligned himself with fellow devil hunters Trish and Lady and battled his evil brother, Virgil. The teaser's really short. It looks pretty. Is Netflix just turning into, like, Crunchyroll now? Because all their good shows are animes.
Right?
Like, this is really weird.
I don't know.
I had no idea this was coming, either.
From PCGamer.com, Telltale Games has laid off an unknown portion of its staff in an unfortunate deja vu moment for a handful of its employees. Word of the layoffs first began circulating when Jonah Huang, a former cinematic artist for the developer, published a series of tweets that claimed Telltale had let go of most of its staff in early September, adding that he was unable to comment on the status of The Wolf Among Us 2, which was delayed earlier this year thanks to being under NDA. For Huang, it's the second time this has happened to him. It's been 5 years to the month since the original Telltale crumbled, letting go the majority of its staff to leave a skeleton crew in September 2018 before officially shutting up shop on October 11th, 2018. Half a decade and a second Telltale layoff later, Huang ended his tweet thread by saying, "Telltale gave me a good deal this time around, but still, it ended the same way most jobs in games end. A layoff, not a retirement. I ask my fellow game devs to fight for better."
Oof! This makes me sad, as the only Telltale fan in the world.
Probably.
Imagine getting laid off twice by the same company, man. Like, what are the odds?
That would suck.
That's gotta, like, I would just exit game development. I'd go back to being a cashier. Fuck it.
That's what I was gonna say. I'll just bag groceries. Fuck it.
Yeah, no. From PCGamer.com, having completed a 3-year comeback that finally turned it into the game it should have been on launch day, it looks like Cyberpunk 2077 is now headed for television screens. See, CD Projekt Red announced today that it is working with production company Anonymous Content on a live-action project that will tell a brand new story set in Night City. The project is still in the early development stages and currently doesn't have a screenwriter, although a search for one is underway. CD Projekt said it's working directly with Anonymous Content Studios head of television Garrett Kemble and various other executives and producers, and that it is being developed in close collaboration with the Cyberpunk 2077 creative team. Anonymous Content has been around for more than 20 years, during which it's been involved with a number of television and film projects, including True Detective, Schitt's Creek, The Revenant, 13 Reasons Why, and Random Acts of Flyness. It's also at least technically working on another live-action video game project, Life is Strange, although that one was announced 7 years ago, and there's still no sign of it yet. I remember. I think this is unnecessary and dumb, because they should make more animes. This would be a much better path.
But 13 Reasons Why, though.
Yeah, that's the selling point, not, like, everything else. Yeah. It's good that they think that it's having the reception they wanted, with the new DLC making a big comeback. Like, that's decent, I guess. It means they won't be laying off half the studio, but not also... not yet. But also, like, why does this need to be live action?
Right.
Make more animes.
From PCGamer.com, CD Projekt Studio head Adam Badowski said during an investor's presentation sometime recently that the sequel to Cyberpunk 2077 is officially underway but still very, very early in the process. Phantom Liberty will be the one and only expansion to Cyberpunk 2077, which is both good and bad news. Bad because now that it's officially all squared away, we want more Cyberpunk 2077, per the article. But good because it means the focus has shifted to the full-scale sequel announced in October 2022 as Project Orion. But, and really this should come as no surprise, Anyone hoping to get their hands on it anytime soon should probably temper their expectations, especially because you have to wait 3 years after the game releases to be able to play it. We decided not to develop any more add-ons for Cyberpunk 2077, but rather to start designing a full sequel to the game under the Project Orion codename, CD Projekt Red Studio Adam Badowski explained during the presentation. This project is on the conceptual design level right now, and it's going to be designed by a team of veterans who were responsible for designing Cyberpunk 2077 and designing Phantom Liberty. Good, I guess. I'm releasing a complete game. That's all I want.
I agree. They should get a new fucking engine. And they should just switch to Unreal 5, because that's what the other games that they're working on are in. Both the Witcher 1 remake and the next Witcher game, not Witcher 4, are in Unreal 5. So just new engine. Because that seemed to be the biggest problem with 2077, was the engine was like 20 years old. So like...
Why?
Stop it.
Yes.
Stupid. Very stupid. That is the end of the gaming news, baby.
That is correct.
And that is the end of the episode, baby.
Because we only reviewed one game mutually. And you know what? So cool. We're doing it again next month.
Yes.
The Dead Space remake.
We are spit roasting Isaac yet again.
Yes.
Go give us money. We'd appreciate it. If you like what we do here, our minimal effort content that we slave away on every day of the week, go to patreon.com/DimeComicBrosNetwork to give us the monies. There we have a bunch of different tiers with cool rewards, including getting your name shouted out every episode.
Just like this, Caitlin and Jeff Lawrence.
There you go.
Ah.
And stickers and bookmarks and drawings by Colin and other drawings by Colin and custom drawings by Colin and all sorts of other cool fun stuff.
Colin is the guy that's usually on our other show, Dime Comic Bros, but he's not anymore.
And he's also not here because he doesn't play enough video games.
Except for the one day this week where he played all of Lies of P and then started a new game plus.
Yeah, I think he did it in like 3 days tops.
No. Legit one day.
He did the full playthrough in one day?
Pretty much.
Jeez, dude.
And then started another playthrough.
He is not okay.
He did it all in like 24 hours.
The men are not okay.
No.
He really just likes playing Femboy Simulator.
I guess so.
Yeah. You get early access to all of our podcast episodes, as well as exclusive access to Dime Comic Bro and Dime Gaming Bro Happy Hour segments, where after each show, we sit down, crack open a beer, talk shop, talk shit, talk shingles, talk shit on a shingle, great dish, I love poverty meals, and just kind of bounce around and be goofy, silly people.
I've heard about shit on a shingle from multiple people, and it sounds like it's different depending on who you talk to.
So
what do you consider?
In my family, typically it would be pumpernickel bread, but any bread works.
Okay.
Toasted heavily, usually, and then you have like cream of mushroom or cream of chicken with like peas and then maybe mushrooms, mm-hmm. and usually beef, like ground beef, mm-hmm. like cooked in a pot and mm-hmm. then put on top of it. And then you just kind of like an open face sloppy Joe kind of.
Interesting.
Something like that. What have you heard it described as elsewhere?
I legit don't know. But weird. It's different every time somebody mentions it, I swear.
Weird. Yeah, it's one of those shit, what's in the pantry type foods.
Right.
But it's pretty solid. I've had it, I think, one time. I think one of my grandmothers would like put it all on the bread and then put it in the oven. So it would be like in the oven. I don't know. Wacky stuff.
Google says it is creamed chipped beef on toast.
That's close enough. Also a shout out to our partners over at Jetpack Comics and Games in downtown Rochester, New Hampshire. You should support your local any type of niche business, but especially if you're into comic books or board games or generally nerd shit, definitely check out local comic shops. They're great places to go hang out. They all have lots of events and giveaways and cool signings and all the stuff that you could ever want. Lots of good community, good people over there. And they support us, so we support them. And we support them, so they support us. Big circle. Next month, like Jacob said, is Dead Space Remake. And
I'm definitely not a quarter of the way through it already.
Fuck off. and a game, show, or movie of indeterminate title. So tune in next month for that. Thank you for listening. Now get the fuck out of my house.